as we were preparing for the memorial service for Dick Bush, which we celebrated yesterday, his daughter Barb typed up a little document of all of the little phrases her dad used to say. You know, those things that parents say over and over that make them who they are. There were simple things. He'd always end a phone call with, "Call me if you need me." And if he looked over the top of his glasses at you and said, "Now wait a minute," you knew that you'd been found out. You knew that he had your number. One of his phrases that stood out to me, though, as I was praying with this week's gospel, it's never the wrong time to do the right thing. Yesterday, I lifted this up as an example of a life worthy of imitation, as an example of an ethical, moral integrity that we all ought to strive for. And at first blush, it seems to contradict today's gospel. Could Jesus actually be encouraging us, as in chapter 16, verse 9 of Luke's gospel, it reads, "And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it's gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes." Is Jesus actually saying, shrug your shoulders and just play along your cards in whatever dishonest game you've been given, because otherwise you might lose what you've got? Put that clearly, that straightforward reading of this text is clearly not faithful. So what is? I think that we come back to one of Dick Bush's favorite lines. It's never wrong to do the right thing. The key here is which character in the parable we're supposed to admire and who is speaking in verses 8b and 9. Very often in the parables, we're supposed to read that the landowner character is God, and that is the character to be emulated. Think of the father in the story of the prodigal sons, or the person who's called shrewd is lifted up as our model. Creative use of our gifts and resources is often a lesson of the parables. But here, verse 9 essentially says, use ill-gotten gains to feather your own nest. Could that possibly be Jesus' lesson here? Now, I might not be a savvy businesswoman, but I just can't imagine Jesus is saying here, be as dishonest as the current socioeconomic system. So, what if neither the master nor the manager is supposed to be emulated? What if verse 9 isn't a lesson for us, but rather the lesson that the dishonest manager was advocating? Then that disconnect makes sense between what verse 9 is saying, use any means necessary to save your own hide, and verses 10 and 11, where we read, whoever is faithful in very little is also faithful in much, and whoever is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have been not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust you with true riches? Jesus' lesson is to be faithful, to be a person of character, even when the system around you doesn't seem to be calling for it, even when the system around you doesn't reward you for it. Have integrity. Live honestly and justly, even if your boss doesn't expect it. There's a fabulous example of this in an article that ran in the Washington Post yesterday afternoon. Chief Standing Bear just wanted to bury his son at home. The teenager, on his deathbed, told his dad he was worried that if his bones were not buried with his ancestors, then he would be alone in the afterlife. So in January 1879, Standing Bear left Oklahoma's Indian Territory for Nebraska with his child's remains. That act of grief and love set in motion a chain of events that would make Standing Bear one of our unsung civil rights heroes. Standing Bear was born sometime between 1829 and 1834 to the Ponca tribe in their native lands of northern Nebraska. By 1858, the Poncas were forced to cede most of their land except for a small area near the Niobrara River, where they became farmers rather than buffalo hunters. But they did well, growing corn and trading with the white settlers often. 10 years later, he described, as described by D. Alexander Brown in her classic, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, the remaining Ponca land was mistakenly included in a treaty between the United States and the Sioux Indians. Although the Poncas protested over and over again with Washington, officials took no action. People from the Sioux tribes came down demanding horses as tribute, threatening to drive the Poncas off the land, which they now claimed as their own. The U.S. government finally took action in 1876, but not in the way that the Poncas had hoped. Congress declared that the Poncas would be moved to Indian Territory in Oklahoma in exchange for $25,000. Though the bill stated clearly that this would all happen with the consent of the band, when the Poncas declined the inferior land that they were offered in Oklahoma, they were forced to leave anyway. By the time they arrived in Oklahoma in 1878, it was too late to plant, and they also didn't get any of the farming equipment that the government had promised. More than a third of the Poncas died that winter, including Standing Bear's sister and beloved son. Standing Bear and his burial party evaded capture while they traveled home, but they were caught and detained after visiting relatives at the Omaha Reservation. The man who caught them, Brigadier General George Crook, curious name there, Brigadier General George Crook had been fighting Native Americans for decades, but he was moved by Standing Bear's reasons for leaving Indian Territory and promised to help him. Crook went to the media, which spread the story of the plight of Standing Bear and his fellow prisoners nationwide. Then two lawyers offered to take up the case pro bono and asked a judge to free the Poncas immediately. Though Crook was sympathetic to Standing Bear, since he was the official carrying out the government orders to detain them, the civil rights case that resulted is actually called Standing Bear versus Crook. The U.S. attorney argued that Standing Bear was neither a citizen nor a person, and as such did not have standing to sue the government. On the second day of the trial, Chief Standing Bear was called to testify, becoming the very first Native American ever to do so. He raised his right hand and through an interpreter said, "My hand is not the color of yours, but if I pierce it, I shall feel pain. If you pierce your hand, you shall feel pain. The blood that will flow from mine is the same as the blood that shall flow from yours. The same God made us both. I am a man." the judge agreed, ruling for the first time in U.S. history that an Indian is a person and has all of the rights and freedoms promised in the Constitution. The judge also ordered Crook to free Standing Bear and his people immediately. Despite the landmark decision from the judge, his opinion still drips with the prejudice of the time, calling Native Americans a weak, insignificant, unlettered, and generally despised race. Yet, Standing Bear was able to return to the land by the Niobrara River and bury his son alongside his ancestors. And when he died in 1908, he was buried there as well. I share this rather long story in connection with our gospel today to highlight the behavior of Brigadier General Cook and the attorneys. It was General Cook's job to fight the Native Americans. He'd been doing so for decades. I doubt that he was a saint. And yet in this instance, he heard the argument set forth by Standing Bear, wanting to bury his son among his ancestors, and found it compelling. While he could have thrown up his hands and said, it's the law, he didn't. Rather, he started a media campaign, tried to help other people to see Standing Bear and his people as people. He brought others to see the light along with him, and he did the right thing, even though it wouldn't further his career, even though it was contrary to the law. General Crook, like Dick Bush and Jesus' lesson at the end of today's gospel, modeled for us that it is never wrong to do what is right. He had come to understand that furthering his own career by ill-gotten gains was not honorable nor just. Friends, most of us won't find ourselves in the situation of having to enforce unjust U.S. treaties on behalf of the government. But we very well may find tasks before us that are shady, dishonest, a little crooked, that don't pass the smell test. And we have a choice. We can follow the ways of the dishonest master and manager, or we can live lives of integrity. We can serve the god of mammon, that is, the god of wealth and worldly prosperity and systems designed to help the people who currently are in charge to stay in charge. Or we can be people of the light. We can say, I'm not going to let the dishonesty of this world and its corrupt systems diminish my integrity, demean my honesty. It's not an easy road. The temptation to use dishonest wealth is real, especially when we're painted into a corner. But today's gospel conclusion is simple. You can't serve both God and wealth. It doesn't say you cannot serve God and have wealth. The question is who you serve. God and honesty and integrity, or dishonesty and shrewdness and stepping on others? The gospel makes it clear. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Thanks be to God.